Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca, Mesut Ozil. Alexis, en el descuento ha marcado el Arsenal, como viene siendo habitual esta temporada. Gol de Alexis, 1-0 Arsenal.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello there, welcome to another Arscast Extra brought to you today by Audible.com for a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial. Just go to audibletrial.com/Arscast. With me as always, James from Gunnerblog. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon to you.
How is the interlull treating you?
It's all right. I'm finding it hard, actually. I'm a bit bored. The quality of the international football that I've watched, at any rate, hasn't been great. But then, as an Englishman, that is a kind of perennial problem.
Yeah.
Did you watch the Ireland game?
I did watch bits of it, yeah. Sort of the last part. We were wondering how on earth to get Sky Sports 5, because we don't have that. And then we realised it was on RTE. So watched the last part, and it was pretty terrible, apart from McGeady's goal, which was very, very good. But, you know, it's not the same at all.
No. No, it's not. It's not the same.
No.
The constant worry of people being injured, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think so far we've managed to avoid any injury in this interlull. Obviously, there's a little worry about some players that have gone away and haven't played, and they might be injured, but we'll touch on that in a few minutes' time. I want to start with the burning issue of the week, and that's Danny Welbeck and the stories that are going around. It's kind of a conspiracy theory type thing that Arsene Wenger might not have signed him, and it was Ivan Gazidis who did it when Arsene's back was turned. Mm-hmm. Firstly, just let me ask you, do you think it's strange that we haven't heard anything from the manager about the signing of Danny Welbeck yet?
I don't think it's particularly unusual, no. I mean, obviously, normally when a signing's unveiled, we get that kind of customary wheeled-out quote about how excited we are to welcome him to the club. You know, something like that. Arsene Wenger says he's a player we've tracked for a long time. That's usually in there along with the long-term contract and the undisclosed fee. But I think the way this deal went down so late in the day, it went right to the wire, albeit a flexible wire. I just can't imagine that was a pressing priority for anyone, really, to get those couple of sentences off the manager. And also, since then, we know he's been out and about. We know he's been at this conference in Geneva. He hasn't done his .com, you know, weekly interview that he normally does. He's leaving that. He's left that for a week. So I don't know. I personally don't see much in it. What about yourself?
No, I mean, it might be a little bit odd that nothing has been said. What's maybe odd is that it didn't happen in the announcement about his signing, because normally it's like, Arsenal have signed so-and-so, Arsene Wenger says, we're delighted to sign so-and-so, he brings this and that to the team, and the player says, I'm delighted to be joining Arsenal, I'll bring this and that to the team, blah, blah, blah. But I think, given the circumstances of the signing and when it happened, with Welbeck on England duty at Arsenal, the training ground, Arsene Wenger in Rome, and having to get an extension from the Premier League in order to get the signing through, you know, I can understand why it didn't happen. That nothing has been said in the next 7 days doesn't really surprise me either. There's been pretty much radio silence all the way through. I think when he does speak to either the official website or at his press conference, I'm sure he'll have plenty to say about Danny Welbeck. So there, but look, I mean, yeah, maybe a little bit odd, but definitely nothing sinister from my point
think,
of view.
Yeah, I think it is a little bit unusual, but it seems to me that the club's communications are kind of slightly on downtime during the international break. You know, the manager's not around, the content we're putting out is not quite as regular. So I don't find it particularly surprising. Maybe that's what the extension was for. Maybe they were desperately trying to get a quote from Arsene before they announced the deal.
And he's in some pizza restaurant in Rome.
Well, as usual,
quaffing back some nice wine. Then. Mm. But look, in terms then of the transfer itself, one of the criticisms that's levelled at Arsene Wenger is that he has far too much control over every aspect of the club, right? Mm-hmm. So he is dictatorial, some might say. Now, it seems rather odd to me that if this is a widely held belief about Arsene Wenger, that all of a sudden we're supposed to believe that when he's gone, they've just gone, let's go and sign a striker. Just, you know, not here. It doesn't make a great deal of sense. And you actually have information about how the deal went down.
Yeah, no, we do. And I mean, as you say, even without that, it wouldn't make any sense at all. You know, we know Wenger was interviewed in Rome in the evening saying he was hoping to complete, you know, a deal for a player, unless I suppose the conspiracy theorists might say that was a different player and that deal was scuppered by Ivan Gazidis' swoop for Danny Welbeck.
He used up all the money.
Yeah, exactly. Arsene shaking his fist. Oh, damn you, Ivan. But no, basically the way this deal went down, Danny Welbeck is represented by his brother. He acts as his agent, Chris Welbeck. And I think Arsenal, in order to do this deal and not just be dealing directly with the Welbeck family, brought another agency on board in order to, you know, help manage the negotiations. And actually, I know for a fact that Arsene Wenger himself made a call at about 7:30 in the morning to that agency to express his sort of urgent desire to push this deal through on deadline day. So he was directly involved in the negotiations, and actually representatives of the agency were with him in that infamous airport picture which came out around midday. So that could be relevant or not, but effectively his hand was firmly involved in this transfer. There's no way that he would ever have let it happen without his consent, and it happened, albeit late in the day, at his behest.
There you go.
So that should clear that up.
Should do.
I mean, you know, you can't stop the conspiracy theorists, can you? It's always nice to have something to pontificate about.
But who was, do you know, behind the grassy knoll on deadline day? Any idea?
Dick Law. Dick Law behind the grassy knoll.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. You don't give it the time of day, do you, this story?
No, I just can't believe that, you know. No, because we know that Arsene Wenger decides who comes in and who goes out and what happens on a football level. That now he might be a little bit more willing to delegate certain aspects of it in terms of the negotiations and the actual procedure of making a transfer to Ivan Gazidis and Dick Law and whoever else is involved. That's fine. But nobody is going to say to Arsene Wenger, you're signing Danny Welbeck. You have to sign Danny Welbeck, or we're signing Danny Welbeck. It just doesn't work like that. Nobody who's watched Arsene Wenger at work or who knows anything about the way that he works can surely believe that that would be the case. So,
yeah, and I do think, you know, there is something interesting. There is something interesting about how late the deal happened. You know, we know now that Wenger made that call on the final day itself. And I think it's, you know, it's possible to argue that Welbeck perhaps wasn't his first choice. But he's absolutely all over this deal. And there's no way, as you say, it would have taken place without his consent.
Yeah.
It would make for an interesting return to the training ground next week, though.
Yeah. Here's your team and that guy over there.
Yeah.
Go say hello. No, I'm shy. Yeah, so there we go. That's that then, in terms of Danny Welbeck. And, you know, obviously there's a lot to be written about him, hopefully, in the weeks and months to come.
He'll be starting for England this evening, it looks like.
Yeah.
Against Switzerland. So I look forward to his inevitable injury.
Well, we've done all right so far, I think. Mesut Ozil didn't play for Germany. He went away after injuring his ankle against Leicester. Mm-hmm. And I think the initial diagnosis from the German camp was that, right, we're not going to play him in the friendly, but we will give him a game on Sunday. Should we be worried by the fact that he didn't make the squad for Scotland? I mean, it can't be for good reason.
No, I mean, I think, of course, we should be concerned. I think he has to be a doubt for the Manchester City game now. It did look like quite a bad one, didn't it? He did seem to be in some discomfort against Leicester.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, as I said in the blog, I think had the circumstances been different, if we'd had a substitute to make, it would have been made. Mm. And if we weren't chasing the game, or if we were 2-1 up, I think we probably would have taken him off as well. As it was, we sort of asked him to go back out and run off an ankle sprain, is what it looked like anyway. It looked like he went over on his ankle.
And did he travel then? He travelled to Germany?
Yeah, he went to Germany, and they've obviously assessed him. But, they've decided against playing him. Now, whether that's precautionary, whether Yogi Löw is being a sensible manager, I don't quite know, or the injury could just be too severe for him to play. So we'll have to wait and see what happens with this one, because, you know, ankle turns can be 2-3 weeks.
Yeah, you'd have to imagine if he was in, you know, fit or available, they would have wanted him against Scotland. You know, that's a competitive game, quite a tight game in the end, and they've got a couple of other injuries, Germany. So, yeah, not great indications ahead of the weekend. And I think Ozil's a player who, at the moment, you don't necessarily want him out there if he's not 100%, to be honest. You know, I think for him to have his maximum impact, he needs to be at the top of his game, conditioning-wise.
Mm. I'm not saying in one way it would solve a problem, but I think we discussed last week that maybe Arsene Wenger's finding it a little bit difficult to fit him and Alexis and Santi Cazorla in the team.
Yeah.
To find a system that's working with those three players. Would the arrival of Welbeck perhaps give the team a more obvious focal point? Because we know that Sonogo has been asked to play there, and I think perhaps the struggles against Leicester precipitated the move for Welbeck in a way. Mm. But yeah, I mean, having those three beside him or behind him slightly is quite a tasty prospect. But how do you achieve a balance in the team with three players like that? And then Theo Walcott to come back as well.
Well, this is it. I mean, you know, everyone talks about Welbeck being able to play on the left, but I think until Christmas, at least, he's going to be considered pretty much as a central striker, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
And Theo Walcott, you'd think, occupies that right flank role. And then that leaves you with kind of, you know, several different options. You know, if Welbeck starts, that pushes Alexis out to the left, maybe?
Hmm.
I think there'll still be games where Alexis plays through the middle, though, even with Welbeck's arrival. I think that, you know, that is something that Wenger wants to have as in his arsenal, as it were, you know, have as an option for certain games. So I think that even with Welbeck there, there'll be games where he's on the bench and Alexis starts up top.
What about the two of them together? Something that I think Amy Lawrence suggested before deadline day was that if you're having issues with strikers and making it work or scoring goals, that perhaps it's a lot to ask for one man to be the guy who's got to fill that role. Whereas if you have two, you know, I know the game has changed a little bit in terms of formations, but surely there's a way of fitting two strikers into the team. Liverpool seem to be doing it.
Yeah, well, actually, I had this as one of the questions Liam Stewart asked, should we go back to playing two up front? And it's something we talked about quite a lot last season, because Wenger did it kind of in emergency circumstances, didn't he? Again, in the FA Cup, in the semi-final and final, throwing on Sonogo to play up top alongside Giroud. But seeing Liverpool do it, you know, quite regularly and quite well, I do wonder if a system like that could work for us. You know, they play that kind of diamond midfield. It's very easy to see how you could play with, you know, Arteta at the base, maybe Wilshere and Ramsey just either side of him, and then a Mesut Ozil figure in that Sterling role, that floating role ahead. And then you've got yourself two strikers who can kind of share that goal-scoring burden. And it strikes me as well that there are forwards who maybe who don't convince fully as out-and-out strikers at Arsenal, but could function well in a two. I'm thinking of someone like Lucas Podolski, maybe, who you'd never put him as a central striker in the one up top system. He doesn't seem to have that in his game, but in a two, maybe he could offer more. And maybe the same is true of Alexis or Walcott. You know, they would have that physical presence with a Welbeck or a Giroud to kind of offer that balance. So that is something I'd be interested to see.
Mm.
Realistically, do I see Wenger going for that? I'm not sure. He seems quite wedded, doesn't he, to at least that sole striker at present.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, but I mean, I think it's trying to find a system that gets the best out of the players that you've got. I think if you're completely entrenched in one formation and don't consider changing it in order to get more out of the players that you've got, then that's unhealthy, really. And it strikes me that if he came to the conclusion that a formation change would work, that he could get more out of Ozil and Cazorla and Alexis and Welbeck and Walcott and, you know, whoever, then he'd be open to that in a way.
I mean, at present, it does seem like the system is in flux to an extent. You know, I say he's wedded to the one up top, but he seems to be changing the shape of the midfield slightly. So perhaps it's not beyond the realms of possibility. I don't think Manchester City next week will be the occasion to try it, if I'm honest.
Mm.
I think that Wenger will look to have quite a sort of, you know, packed midfield against City to make sure that we can dominate in the middle of the park.
I mean, do you think he'll do what he did last season in terms of the formation? Because at home we were all right, but again, this... I mean, 4-1-4-1... very quickly can become 4-4-1-2-3-1. You know, it's not that fixed, is it?
Mm.
In terms of what the players can do,
yeah,
either with or without the ball. Yeah, it'd be interesting.
I mean, on that two up top thing, if you say to Arsene Wenger, have you considered playing with two strikers? His retort would be, well, we do play with two strikers. You know, we played with Sonogo and Sanchez, and he'd say he often considers some of those wide forwards to effectively be strikers. You know, when Theo Walcott plays ostensibly as a right winger, he plays very close to Giroud and right on the line of the defence. So I think Wenger often considers those wide players as kind of supplementary strikers in a way, but it's not a front two in the traditional sense, and certainly not in the sense that, you know, that we would recognise from the old days at Arsenal.
No. All right. Well, look, we'll see, obviously, towards the end of the week, what's going to happen with that one. But what we're going to do now is take a short break. We're back, and we'll be answering your questions after this. Welcome back to the Arsecast Extra, brought to you this week by Audible, where you can get a 30-day free trial and a free audiobook download. They've got all kinds on there, football ones and fiction and drama and Harry Potter or whatever it is you might like. They've got audiobooks for you to try. audibletrial.com/Arsecast. That's audibletrial.com/Arsecast. Sign up, get yourself a 30-day free trial and an audiobook for your ears. And it's free. So there you go. And it does help us out here, and we appreciate that. And on that point, the audiobook of Together, the story of Arsenal's unbeaten season, is coming soon, hopefully within the next 5 or 6 days. So stay tuned. I'll announce that on site. Time now for the questions that you sent to us on Twitter, at GunnarBlog and at ArsBlog. James, fire away.
Okay, well, this one we had from quite a few people, but one of those was Karen Venter. She asked, pretty straightforward, would you start Welbeck against City?
Absolutely.
Yeah, straight in.
Straight in. Even though he's going to be on crutches after tonight's England game. I think he could use those crutches to trip up Vincent Kompany. Yeah, I mean, I think so. You know, we need a striker. He is probably the most suitable player we've got in the central striking role. Some comments from Yaya Sanogo about how Welbeck is going to have to fight for his place. And I kind of like the attitude of Sanogo in that regard when he's talking about, you know, people can criticise and that's fine, but the goals will come. And he's obviously confident and has
the goals for the under-21s as well.
Yeah. So at the moment, though, I think Welbeck has got to go. He's got to go straight into the team. Actually, on that one, I have a question here which is quite similar I'll just get it up. It is from Zach Harris. Mm-hmm. And he says, assuming Ozil and Arteta are healthy and fit, how would you line up against City? What would be your team?
Ooh, okay. Well, so obviously Chesney in goal.
Mm.
Are we expecting Kieran Gibbs to be back? I don't think we are. I think maybe in contention, but I sort of think Monreal's done very well, and I kind of think he'll keep his place.
Yeah, I agree.
For the time being. So I'd say Debuchy, Mertesacker, Koscielny, hopefully all being well. It's only a cut, so fingers crossed he's all right. And then Nacho Monreal. Arteta, see, I'd go back to kind of last season's midfield shape. I'd have Arteta in deep alongside Aaron Ramsey slightly further ahead, and Mesut Ozil. Mesut Ozil probably in the middle for me.
Mm-hmm.
Then Santi Cazorla drifting in from the left, Alexis Sanchez on the right-hand side, and Danny Welbeck up top.
Yeah.
That would be my 11. What about you?
That would be exactly the same. Yeah. Exactly the same. Oh, you know, I'd nearly be tempted by Oxlade-Chamberlain. Nearly, yeah. But I think Cazorla's been playing quite well. And if we're going to move Ozil to the middle, then Cazorla's got to play, and he's got to play from the left-hand side. So,
and we talked about the possibility of no Mesut Ozil. If he was out the side, how would that change it for you?
Cazorla in the middle and
Oxlade-Chamberlain
on the left-hand side. I think that's what I'd do.
So you'd have Oxlade-Chamberlain in above Jack Wilshere at the moment?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Based on the system that you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah.
I would. Yeah. I mean, I like Jack, but I just think in that kind of a game, I'm not sure that position on the left-hand side would suit him particularly well. Whereas Oxlade-Chamberlain has got that burst of pace and he can give us that energy down the left-hand side.
But you could always put Jack in the middle with Ramsey and Arteta and shunt Cazorla out wide again.
Yeah.
But I personally would want to try and get Ozil back in the middle for this game if we can. And I think to do that, you need to give him the sort of robust support of Arteta and Ramsey behind. Cool.
There you go. All right. This one comes from... Oh, shit. I should have figured out how to pronounce this before I... it's Joseph Parastatidis.
Okay.
Joe_Paras. And he says, imagine God made you a superhero for a day, and your power is the ability to use the Football Manager editor on real people. Ooh. Your power is limited to only 3 Football Manager stats for 1 player. Who do you choose, and which stats do you boost? And he gives an example of Jack Wilshere: decisions 20, strength 20, fitness 20.
That's a great question.
Yeah.
Well, the first one, I know that there's a stat on Football Manager for composure, so I'd be straight in and fiddling with that on Welbeck, ramping that up high, because he seems to have pretty much everything else in his game. That's what's lacking. So do that, and we've got ourselves a potent number 9.
Mm.
I've got 2 more. He's like a genie, this guy.
He says he can use only 3 stats for 1 player, but I think 1 stat for 3 players is a better question.
So. Oh, okay. Sorry, I misunderstood it, but I improved it.
Yeah.
3 players. Do you know what? Mesut Ozil finishing, I think.
Yeah.
I would, because I think as a number 10, you know, I do want to see him playing there in the middle, but I think playing in that position, Gary Neville's got a real bee in his bonnet about this. He says, you know, number 10s get away with not contributing enough goals. Because if you're effectively playing at what used to be called a kind of second striker, you know, back in the days of Dennis Bergkamp, you really need to be hitting double figures in terms of goals scored, I think, to be effectively contributing. And I kind of agree with that. So as for all Ozil's amazing technique, put him in front of goal and he can sometimes flounder.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It seems to be, it must be psychological because there's no technical issue at all.
No, that's true.
But anyway, his finishing, I would definitely ramp right up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think I would go, ooh. Now, there's a couple in my mind. I'm very tempted by Per Mertesacker's pace. Partly because I just think, wouldn't it be wonderful if he was the quickest player on the pitch?
That would be priceless.
What a sight that would be. It'd be like something out of Jurassic Park. Just tearing around. So I think I'll go for that.
Mertesacker with 20 pace.
Yes, I would like that very much.
That'd be fucking awesome.
Any obvious ones I've missed that spring to your mind?
Well, I think if we're going to be kind, we could give Sonogo finishing a 20, couldn't we?
Yeah, we could do.
Maybe, let me think, who else could we do?
I mean, you know, if we're feeling generous, then, you know, we could give Abu Diaby's kind of general fitness a big boost, couldn't we?
That's right.
Kieran Gibbs, that would be a good one to do, I think. You know, if you could find a way to ramp up Gibbs' stats so that he could stay fit for a whole season, I think we'd have a hell of a player on our hands there.
That's true. There could be. Is there a football manager stat for running around a bit? Because we could put Ozil up to 20 for running around a bit, and that would solve any problems people have with his game. Mertesacker, I can't get beyond that now. I'm trying to think of things, and that's just the best possible answer to any of them.
It would be nice to see.
Imagine Mertesacker just bursting from the back. Like outpacing Theo Walcott into the box.
Exactly, yeah. Extraordinary.
Even with
the pace of Lauren Koscielny. Lauren Koscielny is a very quick man. If you could just, you know, somehow, I don't know, we've talked about breeding players before, but that would be an interesting one.
Yeah. If Julio Baptista was still at the club, is there an overhead kicks stat? Probably not one specifically for that, but...
No, that would be a good one. Yeah. Times.
No doubt people will send us their suggestions on Twitter
Okay, this one comes from Peter Ferguson, and he asks, Jack Wilshere, who we touched on before, do you think that Arsene Wenger left him out at Leicester due to his England commitments in the interlal, and should that be in his consideration?
No, I don't think he did. I don't think that really would be a consideration for Arsene Wenger. I suspect he left him out against Leicester because I think Wilshere had played in every game, hadn't he? Until then, and we know that he's had some ongoing issues with his fitness and with his ankle, and perhaps the manager saw it as a good time to give him a bit of a rest. It wasn't that he was we were short of options or anything like that. And if we complain about players being pushed into the red zone, then the manager's obviously got to manage his players in terms of their fitness throughout the season. And he knows them. You know, it's easy for us to sit and go, well, why didn't he play this game or that game? And, you know, you find out afterwards that a player's been ill or a player's picked up a knock in training and, you know, they're not 100% fit. And only the manager knows that. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, it's difficult sometimes to speculate on why decisions are made, but I wouldn't have thought that was a consideration for him at all.
No, I mean, I suppose the only way in which it might have been is that, you know, the fact is Jack Wilshere is an international, so he is going to be busy in this period. If it had been Mikel Arteta, say, a guy who doesn't go away on the international breaks, maybe it would have been less of a concern. But I actually think that if you look at the 11 we put out at Leicester, I'm not sure Wilshere would be in it on merit anyway. And I think that was probably more decisive in Wenger's thinking.
All right. Okay. Here's one from Herbie Gunner, at Herbie Gunner. And he says, what hope is there that Akpom and such can break through to the first team now that we have money? And I guess the signing of Welbeck would be an illustration of that, that Giroud got injured, and the way we dealt with that was to go out and spend £17 million on a striker, which, if we look at it, is probably the third most expensive signing in our history.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I mean, I was actually watching some footage of Chirag Akpom. He scored a hat-trick recently, did he not, at the Emirates Stadium in a youth game. And I was thinking, he does look like a hell of a player. You know, he's got all the attributes you'd want to see in a young striker. He's very powerful, good on the ball. He can dribble, he can finish, he can head as well. He's got a good headed goal in that game. But it is hard to see how he makes the breakthrough. You know, there's quite the queue ahead of him, and Welbeck's jumped into that now. It's certainly a far cry from the days when, you know, although they were criticised and eventually left the club, guys like Nicolas Bentner and Carlos Vela were getting opportunities, weren't they, kind of 18 years of age to play for Arsenal. It's quite hard to envisage that happening now. There needs to be a real injury crisis before Akpom was selected. So I do think it's going to be tough. However, I do think in Arsene Wenger, we've got a manager who, if he sees a unique talent there, will afford it opportunities to shine. You know, he's done that with Serge Gnabry. And I think, you know, if he really believes in Akpom, then he's shown in the past he'll be ruthless and sell players higher up the pecking order in order to give that youth a chance.
I mean, is it a positive thing? I mean, if it's more difficult for a young player to make the breakthrough at Arsenal now, which I think it probably is, when you look at, like you said, 7 or 8 years ago, when the project was to try and build a team of young players together, and we know it didn't really work, as admirable as that was in the circumstances. Is it not a positive thing now that, okay, if a player doesn't make it, then he's going to have the Arsenal education, and if he works hard and applies himself and has a measure of talent, then he's likely to go on and have a good career at a different club, whether that's Premier League or elsewhere. But if a player is good enough to make it, then that is going to be some player.
It really is, yeah. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about this recently because obviously with United selling Welbeck, it's prompted a kind of examination of their youth system and how are their youth products going to come through now they're spending such exorbitant sums on players. I think the only problem is, you know, is one of getting first team football. You know, can Akpom, can he develop to the necessary level to play for Arsenal without getting any games? And the obvious solution to that is loan spells. I'm a little bit surprised that he's yet to get one. Perhaps they're going to wait and see, give him the Capital Cup game and maybe make a decision after that. But I think that's absolutely crucial to development, is regular football at a good level. And I think that's what the future holds for these players, guys like Akpom, guys like Bellerin. You know, they need to get games under their belt if they're going to make it.
Because there does come a point, doesn't there, where a player is, you know, stagnated. If you look at somebody like Thomas Eisfeld, for example, who did really quite well at under 21 level and at reserve level and looked a good player, but still looked a good way short of what was necessary for the Arsenal first team. And in order then to progress, had to leave. So, yeah. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see. I think you're right about the Capital One Cup. He'll keep some of those players as long as we're in the Capital One Cup because it does give him a chance to see them in proper action rather than, you know, a little cameo as a substitute in a game that's won or that we're trying to save. So I think while he's got that opportunity to use those players, he'll keep them in the club. But then there's got to be a procedure for loaning them out so that they can develop.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Arsenal have enjoyed relationships with clubs in the past where they've sent players and, you know, they've done well. Arsene Wenger has affiliations with certain managers, and I think we should look to you know, use that properly and make sure these guys get football under their belt. Because the problem with the Capital One Cup is, you know, we can all say we'd love to see Akpom play, but the way it's looking, Yaya Sanogo is going to be looking for a game in that match. Joel Campbell's going to be looking for a game in that match.
Mm.
And there'll be others too. I mean, Tomasz Rosicki has barely figured this season, you know. So there's going to be plenty of competition even for those domestic cup games.
All right, okay. Another question from you.
Another question. Okay, this one comes from DC86 Guna. And he asks, it's time to put your prediction hat on.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you think will be our top goal scorer this season?
Difficult one, that, isn't it?
Yeah, it's tough to call.
Yeah. I will go for Alexis.
Hmm. Okay. Well, he's had a good start.
He's had a good start. I think he's going to be playing the majority of our games, given the profile of his signing and his quality. You know, we know that he's going to be probably played down the middle at times, but also out wide. He's shown, even in the game against Leicester, that he's capable of the scrappy goal, which is...
I liked that goal, I have to say.
It was, dare I say it, it was Pires-esque. It was
It reminded me of the FA Cup final goal against Southampton, uh-huh. Was it? Just that kind of snappy, you know, finish.
Yeah. So yeah, okay. I'm gonna go Alexis.
Okay, I think I'm gonna go, despite his injury at the start of the season, Theo Walcott. You know, when fit in the last couple of years, he's been pretty prolific. I think he hit 20 goals a couple of seasons back, and I think if he can stay fit, I know it's a considerable if, whether he plays on the right or through the middle, I think it'll probably be the right. I expect him to score plenty of goals, and I think, yeah, he might come out on top. But it's a hard one to call, isn't it? With Giroud out for as long as he is.
Yeah.
Someone's got to step forward, really. But I think it'll be... I don't think we'll end up in a situation whereby we've got one guy on 30 goals and the rest trailing behind. I think it'll be a fairly even spread between the likes of Alexis, Walcott, hopefully Welbeck as well, and Giroud when he comes back.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there isn't the obvious candidate in this team, whereas, you know, there used to be. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I guess depends on your perspective. Whether you think a team needs a 30-goal striker or whether it's more healthy to spread the goals
around. You always sense that Wenger prefers a collective, you know, spirit, doesn't he? He always talks about, when he sold Thierry Henry, he talks about the need for the team to share the responsibility.
Mm.
And I always feel like he's more comfortable with that. He doesn't like to be too reliant on...
Didn't exactly work, though, did it? Because, you know, when we had Thierry Henry, we won a lot of stuff. And then, you know, I'm not saying it was all down to Thierry, but he played a small part.
Well, the thing is, I think if you've got an exceptional striker, obviously, it does help enormously. And, it's hard to know if that's something he really believes or just a way of publicly managing a situation. We'd all like someone step forward and score 30 goals, but I'm not sure. Not sure. I mean, hopefully someone can surprise us and exceed our expectations.
All right, here's a question from Mark Blundell, at Mark Blundell 34. And he says, what is behind Wenger's pursuit of a British core? What competitive advantage does he see in it?
Mm. Really interesting, because it's a big change, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you think back a decade or so. Arsenal were criticised by very many people for not having that kind of British contingent in the squad. And, it was labelled as a kind of prejudice that Arsene Wenger held. I think, in part, that may have been the case, and partly the technical level of British players has increased. But I think, predominantly, it's all to do with the fact that we had all these promising young players, the likes of Fabregas and Nasri, things like that. And they up sticks. They didn't have that kind of, you know, Fabregas wanted to go home, you know, and that was, I think, a big factor in Wenger's thinking. He wanted people who were committed to the club in the long term. And I think a British contingent does help with that.
Is that somehow down to the natural... Okay, the money in the Premier League is a thing, but English players, as a rule, don't really get into the whole lifestyle change in the way that foreign players do, right? So if a young guy comes from Spain or France, comes to England, it's like, well, okay, this is new, and I play for this club for a while, and it doesn't really make any difference to them to go and play for a different club, as we've seen. But maybe with an English core that they have an association, feel more grounded, more settled, like the club is more home to them and makes it more difficult for them to leave?
Maybe. I mean, yeah. Maybe they get it more. I don't know. To be a bit reductive about it, I think... Yeah, I mean, the other thing to say is that Manchester United, for such a long time, had enormous success in England with a British core. And also, if you think about, you know, Arsene Wenger's first successful team at Arsenal, that had a very strong, you know, English group as well in terms of the back four.
You know, without, as did Chelsea when they were winning things.
Yeah. Do you think there is a competitive edge at all? Do you think there is something that helps about having... Do you think having British players helps on the pitch?
I think it's more to do with the quality of the players, isn't it? But maybe there is an inherent understanding of the league or connection with the fans or what it might mean. I don't know. I mean, ultimately, it comes down to how good your players are, whether they're from England or Mars or wherever. But yeah, I mean, I guess there has to be... There's a lot to be said for teams... unity in terms of their how they interact with each other, how they will fight for each other, if they're friendly. I mean, we've had some players down the years who've been excellent players, but who haven't been the most popular in the dressing room. And that probably does have an effect, whether it's conscious or subconscious. You know, there's been players that just haven't been popular or haven't integrated into the group, but have been automatic first team players. And yeah, maybe that's what it is, you know, to try and recreate perhaps what he had with that, with the Invincible team, who were tremendous footballers, obviously, first and foremost. But he put together a group and a team that really worked for each other and fought for each other. And there weren't the same issues in terms of clashes of personality or people who thought they were more than anyone else in that group. So maybe that's what it is.
I think that we'll camaraderie see. Is a big, big factor in it.
Yeah.
I mean, as a fan, do you care? Like, as an Irishman, does it do anything for you? How does it make you feel to see a sort of strong British? Because, I'm from England, and I have to say, I quite like it. It sort of improves my sense of affinity with the players.
Even
just the language thing, I think, is a thing, you know.
Yeah, I mean, look, I was born in London, so I get it from that point of view. I think it's a good idea. You know, if you're an English club, then I think it's good that there's English players at the club, and particularly English players that have grown up at the club as well, because there is always that element of knowing the history of a place and the history of the club and how it operates. And, you know, with people like Pat Rice, who down the years would remind young players, you know, what they were doing wearing an Arsenal shirt and what they represented. And that's passed on through Steve Bold. And, you know, those traditions are important. I think it's good. I like it. But again, you know, if you were to get me 11 players who were absolutely brilliant and didn't come from England, you know, I wouldn't really have any problem with that either. So yeah, I mean, I think it's a healthy enough situation as long as the players are good enough.
Yeah, it doesn't matter that, you know, Per Mertesacker's not English. Doesn't seem to affect his connection with the club or his understanding of the culture. Do you know what I mean? But I do think that that camaraderie is hugely important, and I think building that base makes a lot of sense. And hopefully it can bring us some success.
All right, one more from you.
One more. Okay, this comes from Josh Hunt, and he asks, I assume this is in the light of some comments you made on your blog. Uh-oh. Would you rather spoon with Robert Pires, Thierry Henry, or Olivier Giroud?
Oh, come on. That's an easy question to answer. Everyone knows the answer to that question, right?
Robert Pires?
Of course. Man.
No contention.
Absolutely not.
A man as handsome as Olivier Giroud. Do you think Robert Pires is more handsome than Olivier Giroud?
Yeah, and he's getting handsomer. Have you seen his beard recently?
Is he doing that sort of George Clooney thing? He's aging very well.
Yeah, yeah. He is.
I haven't seen his beard. He's got a beard now.
Yeah, it's a kind of, yeah, it's thick and lustrous and very handsome. He rocks a beard, I have to say. I'm always quite jealous. I'm pretty hairy myself, but my beard is untidy.
Right.
You know, it's not one of those, if I let it grow, it would be all perfectly sculpted and shaped and all the hairs the right length. It would just look like somebody had put an electric charge to a slightly graying bear. And and that's the way it turns out. But no, Perez just seems, now he's got it. So that'd be it for me. What about you? If you had to, of course, you know, given that it's the Rainbow Laces campaign. And
of course, yeah, I'd jump at the chance. I think I'm more of a Thierry Henry man, if I'm honest. I don't know. Something, it's that smile. He's got that winning smile.
That's what it is.
Yeah, of course. Smile.
I've got one more question, but before I get there, we had one here from PJ Bish, who asked, when Bonnie Tyler sang We Don't Need Another Hero, I think she was wrong. Do you think Arsene agrees with her? And I was going to answer this question, but Bonnie Tyler didn't sing We Don't Need Another Hero. Bonnie Tyler sang that she was holding out for a hero, and it was Tina Turner who sang We Don't Need Another Hero.
Come on, guys.
I think you need another hero, Bish.
Yeah.
Basically. So here's my last question. This came in a few weeks ago by email, and I've been meaning to get to it since. It comes from Del Dillingham.
Okay.
Who sounds like a Simpsons character, but yeah. that's his name. Right. And he said, Henny Youngman once said, when I read about the evils of drinking, I gave up reading. Which would you and James rather give up, reading or drinking?
Ooh.
He says, I realize this is probably a little too highbrow, but hey, I'd be interested to know. So what would you give up, reading or drinking?
And when we say reading, are we saying all reading?
So I assume so. Or maybe it's just books. I don't know. Because if you were to give up reading and not drinking, how would you know what you were drinking?
This is what I was thinking. The labels would be an issue.
Mm.
Although, yeah, I'd be lying if I said I look too deeply into what I drink. If the color seems appropriate, although that is a risky strategy, yeah. I can tell you.
Is that lilt or something else?
Do you know what? I would really miss... I think I could manage without novels. I love books, but I think I could fill that void with cinema or theatre or some other thing. But I would miss, you know, all the day-to-day stuff, newspapers, things like that, blogs. I love being able to consume, you know, information.
Mm.
I'm gonna stick with reading. It was a difficult one, but I'm sticking with reading.
You're staying with reading, yeah.
Yeah. Are you gonna make the same call?
Yeah. What would you do all day? Because I mean, you'd never be able to see. Okay. Yeah. I'd have to go with reading too. Now I like a drink, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, it's a nice leisurely pastime. You know, you can have a good time or. A really good time, or sometimes a bad time. But
sometimes,
you know,
a bad time.
Sometimes,
yeah.
But I think I would be more flummoxed without having anything to read. Because imagine, even if you were sitting there eating breakfast in the morning and you can't read the back of the cereal box, like you did when you were a kid. Remember?
Of course.
The box of Frosties or Cocoa Pops there, and you're reading the back of it, and you've read it 5 times, 6 times, but you still read it. What do you do when you go to the bathroom?
Great question.
So I would give up drinking, but I would plant an opium field,
right,
in my garden.
Good
just
strategy.
You know, just to relieve the stress of the day.
Well, that's true. There are other ways to unwind.
Yeah, yeah. So there we go.
There we go.
Problem solved.
Yeah. Indeed.
All right. Okay, well, look, that's it for the Arsecast Extra for this week. We'll be back next week to discuss what happened at the weekend against champions Manchester City. The Arsecast will be here on Friday. We'll talk to you then.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.